live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We have a very important, original, in-depth investigative report to begin our program today, Uncovering the Cover-Up, the Vaccination-Autism Connection. This is by Richard Yale myself. It is fully referenced, fully footnoted. It is all coming from mainstream, independent science. Each year, tens of millions of American children are vaccinated according to the vaccine schedule set forth by the CDC. The current CDC schedule recommends over 25 vaccines by the time a child reaches 2 years of age. The majority of the parents of these children follow the advice of their physicians and the CDC, which states that vaccines are both safe and effective, and that in order to protect hundreds of millions of individuals against disease, we must follow their recommendations. Our medical authorities assure us that they would never allow our children to be exposed to something unproven or known to be dangerous. They claim that vaccines, even when multiple injections are given on a single day, are safe and do, quote, not cause any chronic health problems. Further, they claim that the ingredients contained in vaccines are either harmless or found in such minuscule quantities that they pose no health risks. The medical establishment also states unequivocally there is no connection between vaccination and the rising incidence of autism spectrum disorder. Anyone who questions the safety of vaccination is immediately labeled as irresponsible or a quack who subscribes to pseudoscience. Given that vaccines are mandatory for most children in public schools, it makes sense that they should be scientifically proven to be safe. However, in a careful analysis of thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature on toxicology and immunology, nowhere can we find evidence for these claims on vaccine safety are based on a gold standard of clinical research, meaning long-term, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies. What is glaringly absent is research examining the cumulative toxicological impact of the CDC's vaccine schedule over a long period of time. Never has a concise epidemiological study been published that compares the long-term health outcomes of a group of infants and children given the recommended immunization schedule and a cohort of unvaccinated children. Since such research has been not carried out ever, our medical officials are relying on inconclusive research that is not science-based in order to create public health policy. American parents, meanwhile, are conditioned by our medical officials to bring their children in for regular vaccinations, confusing pure propaganda with scientific proof. All humans possess a unique biochemistry that makes them more or less susceptible to various types of toxins. Whereas one child may be left with a compromised immune system after exposure to an environmental toxin, another child may experience learning problems, another mild brain defects. Vaccine safety is not proved by stating the obvious, that not every child who receives a standard CDC vaccine schedule has autism. As we witnessed a rapid increasing number of vaccinated children being afflicted by conditions such as autism, food allergies, encephalitis, type 1 diabetes, and Crohn's disease, it is critical that we investigate further the role played by environmental toxins to better understand their pathology. And when we look into the independent quality research in science on the safety of vaccines, it's readily apparent that many of the ingredients found in vaccines are toxic, even in small amounts, and may contribute to a range of illnesses, including autism. I will now share with you an uncompromising look at the institutions and individuals claiming that vaccines are safe for our children. I will also share with you a brief review of our medical establishment's best so-called science and show you that it reveals evidence of a corrupt network riddled with conflicts of interest, scandal, making it clear that we simply cannot trust our health officials, any of them, at the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Services, on the subject of the safety of vaccines. Let us begin. This is a two-part series, the first part this week, the second part next week. Today I'm focusing just on the safety of vaccines. Next week on the efficacy. Let's take a look at toxic ingredients in vaccines. Now, what follows is an incomplete listing of scientific studies showing the dangers of common ingredients in vaccines. And by the way, I'm only citing a handful of examples from the peer-reviewed scientific literature. Additional studies appear at the end of my report under supplemental studies. My report is published today on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, on Gary Nall's Facebook, personal Facebook, so you can download it. And when I do a study, just so you're aware of this, it goes through a vetting process. First, scholars and residents review it for accuracy and objectivity. Then it's reviewed by our team of lawyers, because I want any article that I write, any investigative report that I do, to be able to withstand cross-examination in a court of law. Therefore, for parents, scientists, nurses, pharmacists, people involved in the giving of vaccines or have had experiences that are detrimental to themselves or their children or parents with vaccines, I believe that you will have the ability to have a good legal case, individually or collectively, based upon the fraud that I've uncovered, as well as the toxicity that no one is talking about. No one. Let me give you an example. Thimerosal. Thimerosal is an ethyl mercury-containing compound that was, up until recently, widely used in vaccines as a preservative. More than 165 different studies have found thimerosal to be harmful to human health. Mercury exposure has been associated with nerve cell degeneration, adverse behavioral effects, and impaired brain development. It also has been linked to degenerative chronic conditions such as Alzheimer's disease. The developing fetal nervous system is the most sensitive to its toxic effects, and prenatal exposure to high doses of mercury has been shown to cause mental retardation and cerebral palsy. Now, despite a preponderance of evidence showing thimerosal's toxicity, the CDC maintains its position that thimerosal is generally safe in small doses, citing a handful of CDC-sponsored epidemiological studies. We must question all CDC-sponsored studies, as we now have evidence that I will relate a little later, that they have engaged with malice aforethought in a criminal behavior of manipulating science to create an end that had nothing to do with the actual science. It had to do more with protecting the vaccine industry. So I'm looking for independent science, not CD science. One study found evidence of significant, quote, methodological issues and malfeasance in their reporting, even though vaccine manufacturers have phased out the use of thimerosal in most, but not all, vaccines. Some vaccines on the market today, including influenza DTP and the DTP Hib, still contain thimerosal. In a 2010 study published in the Journal of Neurobiologica Experimentalis, researchers at the University of Northern Iowa evaluated dozens of studies that claimed to refute the relationship between autism and exposure to toxic metals such as mercury found in vaccines. The analysis uncovered that several of these studies used erroneous statistical information and faulty methodologies to derive their conclusions that, in fact, evidence suggests that vaccine autism link should not be dismissed by the scientific community. A 2004 study conducted by Northwestern University's pharmacy professor Richard Death and research from the University of Nebraska Tufts University, Johns Hopkins University, found that thimerosal and other toxins contained in vaccines disrupt the biochemical process of methylation in the human body. Now, methylation plays a significant role in normal DNA function and neurological growth in infants and children. The group's findings suggest that the toxicants introduced through vaccinations contribute to conditions such as autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. The thimerosal-mercury autism connection is bolstered by the research of Dr. Boyd Haley, who served as the chairman of the University of Kentucky's Department of Chemistry and spent several years at the National Institutes of Health as a postdoctoral scholar and at Yale University's Medical School's Department of Physiology. Dr. Haley's research has identified mercury, even in parts per billion minute amounts, to be a dangerous immunosuppressant that damages neurological function and is a major contributor to autism spectrum disorder. Dr. Haley's scientific inquiries have provided strong evidence documenting how ethylmercury inhibits the process of phagocytosis, a critical important biological process of the human immune system. It impairs the function of the dendritic neurons in the brain and hinders the production of methyl B12. Each of these processes are significant factors in the onset of neurological illness. In a study published in the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health in July of 2011, Australian authors David Austin and Kerry Shandley surveyed a group of adults who were survivors of pink disease or infantile acridemia, an ailment historically caused by exposure to mercury found in teething powder, diaper rinses, and other materials. And since the survivors of pink disease were proven to be sensitive to mercury, the study set out to determine whether or not higher rates of autism were present among the survivors' grandchildren. Austin and Shanley demonstrated that 1 in 25 of the survivors' grandchildren had some form of autism spectrum disorder. The frequency of autism among children in the general population in Australia is the same in the same age group as those would be 100 or 1 in 160. The results unequivocally suggest that children with a family history of susceptibility to mercury poisoning are far more likely to develop autism. Then we have aluminum. Aluminum is an adjuvant, a chemical booster added to vaccines to induce an immune response. Most vaccines in the CDC schedule contain an aluminum compound. Furthermore, there's a large body of scientific research that support a connection between aluminum and neurotoxicity. The alarming health consequences of aluminum were reported in a 2011 study published in the Journal of Inorganic Biochemistry at the University of British Columbia. The study revealed that rates of autism spectrum disorder among children are greater in countries where children are exposed to the highest amounts of aluminum in vaccines. The authors also noted, quote, "The increase in exposure to aluminum adjuvants significantly correlates to the increase in autism spectrum disorder prevalence in the United States observed over the last 20 years. An additional article by the same research team published in 2014, the issue of the Journal of Immunotherapy, discussed the neurotoxic effects of aluminum on the central nervous system. The article mentioned the role played by the metal in triggering autoimmune and inflammatory responses, altering genetic expression and contributing to neurodevelopmental disorders. These findings are further supported by MIT researcher Dr. Stephanie Senefeth and Senefeth's scientific investigation into the pathology of autism has turned up evidence that the neurotoxicity of aluminum is greatly increased when combined with glyphosate, Monsanto's very widely used pesticide, which is sprayed on crops around the world. Senef posits that not only do these two agents combine to promote neurodevelopmental conditions, but can also disrupt the gut's microbiome, potentially leading to leaky gut syndrome, kidney failure, and other serious complications. Now, it is worth noting that the federal health agencies have admitted to the many dangers posed by aluminum exposure, such as a 357-page document titled Toxicological Profile of Aluminum, released in 2008 by the Department of Health and Human Services Agency of Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. The document, which was thoroughly vetted by CDC scientists, states, quote, "There's a rather extensive database on the oral toxicity of aluminum in animals. These studies clearly identify the nervous system as the most sensitive target of aluminum toxicity, and most of the animal studies have focused on neurotoxicity and neurodevelopmental toxicity," end quote. Despite the government's tacit recognition of aluminum's health risks, the CDC and other federal agencies have made no effort to further investigate the cumulative toxicological impact of the current vaccine schedule. And herein is one of the excuses they use. Well, people get aluminum from other sources. Indeed, they do. It is one of the most abundant minerals in our soil. However, here is where they're disingenuous, because the aluminum that you ingest orally is quickly eliminated through the gut and out of the body. The aluminum you get from being vaccinated goes directly into the bloodstream and stays there. It can pass the blood-brain barrier. It can pass the placental barrier and get right into the developing fetus. So here is a question. How many children have been reported as slow learners, not quite up to the standards of other children at their age? And yet, upon basic analysis, there was nothing within the child's biochemistry that could be determined to be unusual. Why? Because there's no way science at this moment can determine the extent of brain damage in a developing fetus from aluminum, mercury, or any of the other ingredients. So it is for the parent or the school teacher to say, Jimmy is not learning quite at the rate as other children. Maybe we should give him some special educational classes or tutoring. No one is asking, is Jimmy a victim of vaccine toxicity, including aluminum? Because we're not screening any child in the United States for the impact of aluminum on their system. But that aluminum from the vaccine goes in and does not come out the same way as ingesting it. So their basic argument is completely void of any truth. Let's take a look at formaldehyde. We know formaldehyde is embalming fluid, but formaldehyde is a naturally occurring metabolite commonly added to bacteria and viral vaccines. According to the FDA, quote, it is used to inactivate viruses so that they don't cause disease, e.g. poliovirus, used to make polio vaccines, and to detoxify bacterial toxins, such as the toxin used to make diphtheria vaccine. Though formaldehyde may neutralize potential harmful pathogens, vaccines, the World Health Organization listed as, quote, a known human carcinogen, and it's in almost all vaccines. So at the beginning of life, when the baby has no natural immunity, except what is imparted by the mother breastfeeding, and cannot make antibodies for several months, we're putting one of the most toxic known carcinogens into that baby's immune system. And there have been no studies, none, that I can find anywhere in the scientific literature that took a group of children, let's say 1,000, a small group, and looked at their biochemistry over a period of 1 year without any vaccines and then with vaccines and with each ingredient in a vaccine. But until you do such a study, is it reasonable then to say that all these ingredients given at one time into an undeveloped immune system are not harmful when they have absolutely no proof, zero proof of that claim? According to a report by the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, ingesting, quote, formaldehyde can be fatal, and long-term exposure to low doses in the air or on the skin can cause asthma-like respiratory problems and skin irritation, such as dermatitis and itching, end quote. The report also cites formaldehyde, quote, as a cancer hazard, end quote. More evidence suggests formaldehyde exhibits neurotoxic properties as well. It can directly destroy neurons in the brain. Now, the response from our health officials is that formaldehyde is contained in such small doses in vaccine it doesn't threaten human health. However, there is a conspicuous lack of research into the effects of formaldehyde exposure through multiple vaccines in pediatric populations. Given that infants and small children possess a much greater sensitivity to toxins compared to adults, and that formaldehyde is introduced to children through immunizations containing a host of other toxic ingredients, it is crucial that we reevaluate all vaccines that are in use today. We also have monosodium glutamate, MSG. It's been used as a food additive for over a century, imparting a savory flavor that appeals to many people. It has also made its way into vaccines. Dr. Russell Blaylock notes that MSG is classified as an excitotoxin, or a compound which overstimulates cell receptors to such an extent that the cell ceases to function normally, resulting in damage to nerve cells and contributing to seizures. What do we have a growing number of in the United States we did not have historically? Seizures in infants, babies, toddlers. Then we have animal and human DNA. Animal and even human tissues are used as a culture medium to grow the targeted virus or bacteria used in vaccines. Today, vaccine viruses are cultured in chicken fibroblast cells and embryos, chick retinal and kidney cells, monkey and dog kidney cells, aborted human fetal lung fibroblast cells, and mouse brain tissue. That's just to name a few. In 2013, the FDA approved the use of insect cells instead of chicken eggs for the influenza vaccine. Unfortunately, the viral filtration of the substrate that will be used in the vaccines is a primitive manufacturing process. A significant amount of foreign DNA and genetic debris from the culture finds its way into the vaccine that is eventually administered to children. And DNA fragments can recombine with our body's host cells, thereby triggering undesirable autoimmune reactions. Considering the potential increase in autoimmune diseases over the past 25 years in the future, it is reasonable to suspect that the large amount of foreign genetic debris injected into our bodies is wreaking havoc with natural immune function. There are also instances of certain vaccines causing a specific autoimmune response, such as the influenza B vaccine and the type 1 diabetes associated in a hepatitis B multiple sclerosis relationship, which were observed after widespread administration of these vaccines. We also have polysorbate 80. It is a chemical agent used as an emulsifier in vaccines. Research suggests that exposure to polysorbate 80 can, quote, cause severe non-immunologic reactions, end quote. Another study found a connection between this substance and Crohn's disease. And Crohn's disease is at a very high level now in children. Also, there is a new report from a scientist, a mainstream scientist, who has worked within the genetic industry from Stanford University for 20 years, that I just read this morning, that states that these vaccines, using all of these different products, can alter our natural genome, meaning that no one with any certainty can say if we put a genetically engineered product into your body, it won't alter your natural cells. No one can say that because there's no certainty of it. And that is a growing awareness in genetics. We also have Triton X100. This is a type of detergent used in some flu vaccines. Triton X100 has been found to promote cell death and cause intestinal damage in animal studies. One of the things we see in almost all children with autism spectrum disorder is intestinal damage. We also have fennel. Fennel is a type of preservative commonly used in vaccines. A study looking into the viability of preservatives and vaccines noted that fennel, like thimerosal, is neurotoxic. The author suggests, quote, future formulations of U.S. licensed vaccines biologics should be produced in aseptic manufacturing plants as single-dose preparations, eliminating the need for preservatives and an unnecessary risk to patients. We were not told this. In fact, none of the information I'm sharing with you were any parents, any citizens of the United States told by their pharmacists, their pediatricians, their primary care health officials, the CDC, or the FDA. This is what's behind the curtain. We also have a compound known as 2-phenoxythionyl. This is commonly used as an antibacterial agent in vaccines. It reports the chemistry damage to the liver, the kidney, and has neurological toxicity. So these are some of the ingredients, not all, that are in vaccines. Every single one of them poses a risk to human health. Let's look at the real science indicating vaccines are suspect and what should be done about it. If good quality science exists that could discredit the pro-vaccine argument that there is no connection to autism, it is completely understandable that the media and the government and the industry and scientists for hire continue their unrelenting attack on independent scientists, physicians, and most importantly upon the victims themselves. To acknowledge that the entire vaccine program is unsupported by a gold standard science would mean massive lawsuits, congressional investigations, and discrediting the scientist for hire, the CDC, its science-based committees, the FDA, the commissioner, and its scientists and its committees, the U.S. Public Health Service, the pharmaceutical companies. This would be the ultimate scam. In effect, this could be the largest public health scandal in American history, and the public would be very unforgiving. Let's now take a look at more damning evidence linking vaccines with autism and neurodevelopmental diseases and the systematic suppression of this evidence. Scientists at the University of Pittsburgh investigated the effects of vaccines on the neurodevelopment of baby macaque monkeys. The monkeys were given a course of vaccinations typical of the 1990s vaccine schedule. In comparison with the control group, vaccinated monkeys display abnormal patterns of brain growth and dysfunction of the amygdala, both strong indicators of autism when they appear in children. In 2002, the Journal of Biomedical Science published research carried out by scientists at Utah State University's Department of Biology analyzing the effects of the MMR, that's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, on the central nervous system. In their evaluation, the group discovered that autistic children who received the MMR vaccine possess a higher titer of certain antibodies related to measles. These antibodies trigger an abnormal autoimmune response that effectively damages the brain's myelin sheath. Evidence suggests that such damage to the myelin sheath may impair normal brain activities and cause autism. University of California, San Diego and San Diego State University published a study showing a higher incidence of autism among children who were given the MMR vaccine and subsequently took Tylenol. These findings were published in the medical journal Autism. Through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, a federal program charged with the responsibility of financially compensating families of individuals injured or killed by vaccines, the U.S. government has all but admitted to the connection between vaccines, neurological disorders, and autism. A detailed research study appearing in the PACE Environmental Law Review in March 2011 revealed that the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program has been quietly compensating 83 families for cases of vaccine-induced encephalopathy and residual seizure disorder associated with autism. In 21 of these cases, the word autism is actually used in court documents to describe the injuries that resulted from vaccinations. The obvious conclusion is, in paying these claims, the government has implicitly acknowledged the link between vaccination and autism. The question is, if I can find this information, Why can't CNN, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, Fox, or any other media source in the United States? Why can't Mother Jones, Pacifica Foundation, and their KPFA officers? Why can't members of the National Board, who decry this and will not allow discussions or debates on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, to be brought forth? Why is the Nation magazine Mother Jones unaware of this? On the one hand, if everyone in unison is saying there is no connection between autism vaccines, then please explain the final verdict of the U.S. government's own independent review of 83 cases that say it exists. We're paying them. It's real. A recent report from the Department of Justice showed that within a three-month period, from November 2014 till February 2015, 117 vaccine-induced injuries and deaths were compensated by the court. The majority of the injuries listed in the report were caused by the flu vaccine, and the most common injury linked to the flu vaccine was an uncommon illness in which the immune system attacks and damages the body's neurons, sometimes resulting in permanent nerve damage or even death. Why are our health officials not telling us the truth? Why we cannot trust them? Research indicates that conflicts of interest abound in the vaccine industry, making it difficult to have faith in our health authorities. Worse still, evidence points to the pervasive corruption among high-profile individuals and institutions in the medical-industrial complex. Let me give you a few examples. First and foremost, Simpson Wood. In June of 2000, a group of top federal scientists, health officials, the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, the British Health Ministry, and representatives from every pharmaceutical industry that manufactures vaccine gathered in a secret meeting conveyed by the CDC at the Simpson Wood Retreat Center in Norcross, Georgia. Officially titled the Scientific Review of Vaccine Safety Data Link Information, the Simpson Wood Conference reviewed the findings of a large epidemiological study evaluating any relationship between thimerosal, mercury, and autism. The meeting was not open to the public and was subject to a complete news embargo. Well, thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a transcript of the meeting became available. The transcript revealed how health officials engaged in a cold-blooded cover-up of scientific evidence linking thimerosal's use in vaccines with a large spike in autism rates and other neurological illnesses. The director of the Data Link study, the CDC epidemiologist, Dr. Tom Verstraten, was quoted as saying, quote, from the transcripts, "I was actually stunned by what I saw," end quote, citing the staggering number of earlier studies that indicate a positive link between thimerosal and speech delays, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and autism. According to the transcript, quote, Dr. John Klimitz, then the vaccine's advisor to the World Health Organization, stated that it is, quote, perhaps this study should not be done at all, end quote. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recounted in an article the lengths to which our medical establishment went to prevent the scientific findings from reaching the public sphere. From Robert F. Kennedy Jr., quote, the CDC paid the Institute of Medicine to conduct a new study to whitewash the risk of thimerosal, ordering researchers, quote, to rule out, end quote, the chemicals linked to autism. It withheld Verstraten's findings, even though they had been slated for immediate publication, and told other scientists that his original data had been, quote, lost, end quote, and could not be replicated. And to thwart the Freedom of Information Act, it handed its giant database of vaccine records over to a private company, declaring it off-limits to researchers. By the time that Verstraten finally published his study in 2003, he had gone to work for GlaxoSmithKline and reworked his data to bury the link between thimerosal and autism, end quote. Then we have Julia Gerberding, the head of the CDC, a real vaccine insider. There's a revolving door between the vaccine manufacturers and those in government who are responsible for overseeing these manufacturers. A prime example is former CDC Director Dr. Julia Gerberding, who left the agency in 2010 to take a position with the pharmaceutical giant Merck as the president of the company's vaccine division. Gerberding stated in an interview she is, quote, very bullish on vaccines. Her admission is especially disconcerting given her long history of siding with vaccine makers. While in her position at the CDC, the organization was found to be massively exaggerating the threat of the H1N1 swine flu and pushing largely unproven vaccines on the American public with dangerous side effects. Despite her clear alliance with Big Pharma, Dr. Gerberding strongly implied a vaccine autism link during a 2008 interview on CNN with Dr. Sanjay Gupta while serving as the CDC's director, quote, from Dr. Gerberding. Well, you know, I don't have all the facts because I still haven't been able to review the case files myself, but my understanding is that the child has what we think is a rare mitochondrial disorder, and children that have this disease, anything that stresses them creates a situation where their cells just can't make enough energy to keep their brains functioning normally. Now, we all know that vaccines can occasionally cause fevers in kids. So if a child was immunized, got a fever, had other complications in vaccines, and if they're predisposed with a mitochondrial disorder, it can certainly set off some damage. Some of the symptoms can be symptoms that have characteristics of autism. End quote. So here we have the head of the CDC, a pro-vaccine person, a person who sold some stock this year, I believe it was in the neighborhood of about $1.6 million, and that was only half of her holdings in Merck. So that means she has about $3.2 million that she's earned in her stock. How much she got in salary and other compensation, I have no way of knowing, but she is a pro-vaccine person making the statement of that connection. And yet, her own agency said there is no truth. Well, let's look further corruption at the CDC. A man named Thorson, a prime example of the corruption within the CDC around vaccine safety, is the case of Dr. Paul Thorson, a Danish researcher who co-authored 36 CDC studies, two of which are widely cited studies claiming to disprove an autism vaccine link. From 2004 till 2010, Thorson allegedly laundered more than $1 million in grant money allocated for research and used the funds to make personal purchases, including a home in Atlanta. Thorson is currently in Denmark awaiting extradition to the United States. In a recent editorial, Robert F. Kennedy called into question the slow nature of U.S. authorities in apprehending Thorson, stating, quote, the fact that he is roaming free and is easy to find, despite the U.S. federal indictment, does not imply Thorson's innocence. Rather, it suggests a lack of enthusiasm by the Health and Human Services and CDC to press for his capture and extradition. The agency undoubtedly fears that a public trial would expose the pervasive corruption throughout CDC's vaccine division and the fragility of the science supporting CDC's claims about thimerosal safety, end quote. The two autism vaccine studies undertaken by Thorson and his team have been decried by critics as scientific fraud. That means that everyone at the CDC who has gone forth before the media or legislators and said there is no connection between vaccines and autism, we did the studies, they're engaging in supporting a fraudulent study. In point of fact, according to leaked CDC documents, the data from one of the studies, which monitored rates of autism in Denmark after a countrywide phase-out of thimerosal, were heavily manipulated to make it appear that autism rates increased its removal from vaccines, when in fact rates decreased. The researchers' methodology was so unscientific that journals such as The Lancet and the Journal of the American Medical Association rejected publishing the study, and it wasn't until a CDC director wrote a strongly worded letter to staff at the journal Pediatrics that the research was actually published. The other autism vaccine study, co-authored by Thorson, which seemingly debunked an autism link to MMR vaccine, was published in 2002. In his aforementioned editorial, Robert F. Kennedy wrote about the study's questionable methodology, quote, "That study employed CDC's trademark ruse of including many children who were too young to receive the autism diagnosis, which at that point usually occurred at age 4. CDC epidemiologists have consistently used this ploy in their phony autism studies to dampen the autism signal and exonerate the vaccine. The 2002 Madison et al. MMR study also included a substantial number of unvaccinated children and employed a suite of other statistical gimmicks to mask the association of the MMR vaccine," end quote. And then we have the biggest scandal of all, the Dr. William Thompson revelations. In 2014, a senior scientist at the CDC, who is still there, went public with claims that he and his colleagues willfully omitted data from a study that supported a link between vaccines and autism. After discovering a connection between the MMR vaccine and an increased risk of autism among African-American males under 36 months of age, Dr. Thompson claims that he and his fellow authors chose to exclude these data and effectively perpetuated scientific fraud by publishing research which contradicted their actual research conclusions. Commenting on how he and his colleagues misrepresented their findings, Thompson stated, quote, "We decided to exclude reporting any race effects. The co-authors scheduled a meeting to destroy documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met and brought a big garbage bag into the meeting room and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought we should discard and put them in a huge garbage can. However, because I assumed it was illegal and would violate both the Freedom of Information Act and the Department of Justice request, I kept hard copies of all documents in my office, and I retained all associated computer files. I believe we intentionally withheld controversial findings from the final draft of the pediatrics paper," end quote. Ask yourself this: why have there been no congressional hearings, though one congressional member, Congressman Posey of Florida, commented on the, quote, "intentionally evasive behavior of CDC spokespersons on vaccine autism." Dr. Colleen Boyle, one of this group, why he questioned, saying, quote, "I asked her a very direct question. Have you done a study comparing autism rates in vaccinated and unvaccinated children? She started telling us about everything she's done. After she wasted 3 minutes, I cut her off and I demanded that she answer the question. And then only then did she admit that the federal government has never done that very simple, fundamental, basic study," end quote. In light of the growing evidence of corruption and fraud within the CDC, Representative Bill Posey has called for an investigation of the CDC on the issue of vaccine science. However, let us be clear, that was over a year ago. He is holding more than 100,000 documents that were given to him by Dr. Thompson. There are other issues involved, not just that. How many other cases of engaging in intentional fraud? And will we, the people, do anything about it? Even a cursory review of the independent scientific literature on the safety of vaccines and their ingredients demonstrates clearly that our national policies on immunization are deeply flawed. No amount of propaganda can change the fact that vaccines introduce a toxic load to the human body that can cause a wide range of harmful side effects, including neurological disease. The failure of our health authorities to undertake independent gold standard research examining the long-term effects of the CDC vaccine schedule demonstrate the extent to which our medical halls of power are plagued by depraved special interest. We must refuse to participate in this risky game which forces toxic vaccines on children, and we must demand an end to the medical fascism behind it and bring all of those at every level of government to the public court, because it is my personal opinion that when you knowingly inject toxic substances into a public that believes that they are not toxic because you've told them they're not, and those children die or injured, then you're committing a crime against humanity. And for that, you are not protected by being identified by the federal government. I'm Gary Nall. That is part one on safety. Next week, part two. All of the footnotes from peer-reviewed literature, every statement I've made today is fully documented and is now published on our website. It is time for those who care about public health policy to make this an issue. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us today, everyone. We're going to share a lot of audio clips now and also hear something I think you will appreciate. And this is called Big Pharma and the Medical Industrial Complex dole out $3.5 billion in kickbacks to doctors and teaching hospitals. Quote from Caroline Wright from Wake Up World. The U.S. federal government has released disturbing data about the profiteering nature behind our medical system, namely a staggering 4.4 million payments made to physicians and teaching hospitals by medical device and pharmaceutical companies. According to officials from Centers for Medicare and Medicare and Medicaid Services, during the last 5 months of last year, Big Pharma medical companies paid a total of $3.5 billion in kickbacks to 546,000 physicians and 1,360 teaching hospitals. So, there you have it. Now, imagine $3.5 billion in just a half a year. That means around $7 billion doctors, hospitals receive. And then they're supposed to be objective in telling you which condition you should be receiving which medications, including vaccines? I think not. It shows how vulnerable, culpable, and responsible to the pharmaceutical and the major medical industry the physicians are instead of to their public, to the patient. And also, this is Signs of a Dying Society. Thought I'd share this with you. This is from Paul Buchheit from Nation of Change. Quote, a House bill would view corporate crimes as honest mistakes. Wealthy conservatives are pushing a bill that would excuse corporate leaders from financial fraud, environmental pollution, and other crimes that America's greatest criminals deem simply reckless or negligent. The Heritage Foundation attempts to rationalize, saying, quote, someone who simply has an accident by being slightly careless can hardly be said to have acted with a guilty mind. Well, that means that there would be no more people held accountable for anything if this passes. Also, unpaid taxes, the Fortune 500 companies could pay for a job for every unemployed American. That means 8 million unemployed could earn $36,000 a year, the median salary. That's according to the latest report that the companies are holding over $2 trillion in profits offshore to avoid taxes that would amount to $600 billion. So when we allow the tax code to remain what it is, then think of the thievery that exists, all with the full cooperation of both Democrats and Republicans, and the expense of helping Americans. Also, almost two-thirds of Americans' families cannot afford a single bill of a life-saving drug. 62% of polled Americans said they couldn't cover a $500 repair bill. If any of these Americans need a hepatitis pill from Gilead Sciences or an anti-infectious pill from a company they would have to do without because they don't have savings. And violent crime is down. That's good. Prison population doubles. That's bad. And 1 in 4 Americans suffer from some form of mental health problem, and yet they cut back the facilities by 90% and now are putting people in jails. That is a crime against humanity, to put someone who has a mental problem into a jail. They're not going to be able to mix with the population in jail, and they're not going to be able to relate with the guards, so they're going to be punished, tortured, killed. There have been cases where one mentally ill person was scalded to death. Did that person go to jail? No. And that's unfortunate. That just shows you some of the mess we're in. Just 2 program announcements. Tomorrow evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I will be doing a 4-hour special on the Middle East. I believe that the American media, none of it can be trusted. None of it, including some Pacifica programs, to be honest and objective of what really is happening. So I'm going to give you a whole tutorial putting each of the pieces together on tomorrow starting at 7 p.m. So set 4 hours aside to hear a real in-depth discussion and analysis of details you may not be aware of, putting all of it together to show you everything going on in the Middle East, the problems and the solutions. Also, those of you who have supported our local station, the good news is we're getting someone to pick up your premiums today or tomorrow and get them out to you. So that's good. And I saw a movie I would recommend. It is called Censored Voices. It's a small film, very well done, playing at the Lincoln Plaza. And what impressed me about this documentary was that they interviewed a group, around 7 or 8 men who had participated in the 1967 war, and how it was a very short war, a 6-day war. And first they showed the glory of it and winning, and then these people all told you the troubling reality of what they saw. And I will not tell you, because I don't want to spoil the film, but it's crimes against humanity perpetrated by the Israeli government. These were all Zionists, by the way. But it's interesting to hear what they had to say. And one of the most revealing statements made by one of the people is that the public only knows the truth that the victors wish to share with them. So it's a victor's truth. And that's the only truth they ever hear. Truths of exceptionalism and heroism and rightness. But it's never the full story. And just think of all the times we were not told the truth about different things till years later. So it's time that we start looking for the truth, even if it pains us to do so. Also, this coming Saturday night, for those who live in the tri-state area, we're going to have a progressive dinner and a movie. The last time we did this, I think we had about 37 people. It was a wonderful evening where people came together, couples and singles, shared ideas, had dinner, went to a movie, had a great time. I have not had this time in my schedule to do any more. I'll do one more before I have to go on the road and do some filming in Europe. Next Saturday, if you want to join it, you pay for your own movie and dinner, which shouldn't be much, and you get to meet some wonderful people because we've got a lot of great people in this audience with some really good ideas. 646-926-5422. Now, let's listen to a Chicago Police Department investigator who was fired for not covering up 3 killings. And this is just the tip of the iceberg.
He's out of a job, accused of not being fair. CBS 2's Dorothy Tucker talked to him so you can be the judge.
When a Chicago police officer shoots a civilian, the Independent Police Review Authority investigates to determine if the shooting was justified. Since 2007, there have been 400 officer-involved shootings. Only one was ruled unjustifiable. This one from 2013, when an officer fired into this car.
One unjustified shooting. What does that say to the public?
That they are not being investigated fairly.
Lorenzo Davis is a former supervising investigator for the board. He says he was fired 11 days ago for refusing to change his findings on 6 shootings.
I have done interviews or canvasses. I've looked for witnesses.
And concluded all 6 officers were unjustified in pulling their triggers.
You cannot shoot someone because they did not obey your order.
Davis, a former Chicago police commander, says he had received good reviews until last year when bosses concluded he had a clear bias against the police.
Morally, I cannot change it. I have integrity. I just can't do it.
Ironically, when the Independent Review Board was created in 2007, it was in response to accusations that the old board, which was controlled by the police, was unfair to citizens. Davis says this board is no better.
To me, they have a hidden agenda, one that I don't know about, to decide that virtually all police shootings are justified. That logically cannot be.
As for those 6 cases that Davis ruled unjustified, they're all in limbo right now, and any or all could be changed to justifiable. We reached out to the city of Chicago and the police authority and have not heard back from them.
I'm sure people are wondering, the Independent Police Review Authority, how independent is it?
Supposedly it is independent. However, according to Davis, all of the top administrators are former law enforcement officers with the DEA, the FBI, Chicago Police. So there is a connection.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Dorothy.
We'll end today's program with John Cleese on new stupidity.
With people like this is that they are so stupid that they have no idea how stupid they are. You see, if you're very, very stupid, how can you possibly realize that you're very, very stupid? You'd have to be relatively intelligent to realize how stupid you are. There's a wonderful bit of research by a guy called David Dunning at Cornell, who's a friend of mine, I'm proud to say, who's pointed out that in order to know how good you are at something requires exactly the same skills as it does to be good at that thing in the first place, which means, and this is terribly funny, that if you're absolutely no good at something at all, then you lack exactly the skills that you need to know that you're absolutely no good at it. And this explains not just Hollywood, but almost the entirety of Fox News.
And I know some radio networks that I also could apply to. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow, I have so many emails here, I don't know which one to pick first. I just wanted to do a quick shout-out, though, to anyone, any artists in the Naples area who might be interested in doing some art as healing at one of our upcoming retreats. I'd like them to give me a call. So my number is 631-504-6198. It's a very exciting class that people usually just love. Art is healing, using various mediums like sculpting, painting, things like that, sketching, drawing. So give me a call. Artists I'm looking for in the Naples, Florida area. I'm at 631-504-6198. And, you know, I have an email. Can I read a quick email?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. This one comes from Calvin. He says, I was an athlete for 10 years, and then one day I just lost interest, and I've just not gotten back into it. And with that, I let myself get out of shape. And I recently went to your website, and I saw a cavalcade of photos of you throughout the decades of your life. And yet, in your physical shape, there's very little change. And his question is, how do you stay motivated? I need to learn that lesson.
The key to motivation is what you want for yourself. It's very simple. Everything in life is cause and effect. We have to stop living in a duality universe, meaning if you understand cognitive dissonance, it's like having two different views simultaneously. Let's say you want love in your life. Who doesn't? And yet you act unloving. You can't say to someone something negative, toxic, condemning, making them feel bad about themselves and then say, oh, but I love you. You don't. We may need someone, but that doesn't mean we love them, because when you're coming from love, you don't hurt someone. You're there to encourage them. You're there to understand. And if you find you can't relate with that person, you can't harmonize with your love in that person, then you simply let it go and go somewhere else. We're very punitive in our emotions. We're very punitive in business. We're very competitive. We don't appreciate the other. We look at only one winning and everyone else losing, irrespective of if there were two football teams and they both played in the Super Bowl and they went 10 hours over in overtime and then one won by a field goal, the one would be considered losers. That's how we have this. And I feel that that's one of the problems we have. And so there's a point in everything we do where we no longer feel that we're doing it at a level that gives us some satisfaction. And that's why I say I don't believe that we should do any of this stuff to compete. Rather, we should do it because we love ourselves. And if you love yourself, you want the best for yourself. And you want the best for yourself, you're not going to put any junk food in your body, even if you're hungry. You're going to find a healthier way of putting food in and beverage in. If you want to be around people that you are really nice, then select only nice people. Don't select people in your life who've got problems and then wonder why you're walking around with some wreck of a human being in your life who does nothing but complain, or you're trying to rescue a person. I know people that are professional victims. They only see themselves as victims, never taking responsibility, and they try to find people who will rescue them from them being a victim, only then to victimize that person, because all rescuers are enablers. So anyone trying to rescue someone else in life really has deep-seated problems, because their only value comes from what they do for other people and get acknowledgement for that. And people who are being rescued who play that game, they're going to take that for granted. So what if you just had people in your life to go out and work, do a workout with, people to enjoy, people relationship, who are good people? Not occasionally, all the time. We have lost so much of respect for character, ethics, morality, and spiritual values within anything we do, including ourselves, that we don't think it's possible to be around happy people, positive people, doing good things all the time. So we get bored. We get bored with ourselves, therefore we stop something because it no longer serves some superficial need. Well, being healthy isn't a superficial need. It's a primal need. Being happy is a primal need. Being able to socialize with people who care for us as we are is a primal need. So you show me someone who gets bored with being healthy, I'll show you a person who's bored with their own life. They're out of touch with who they actually are. So it's not about motivating a person with 10 steps to get back into exercise. Anyone knows if you don't exercise, you're going to get out of shape. You get out of shape, you're more susceptible to dying from all forms of conditions. You're going to look older than someone who exercises. So when people see me, and I have a lot of photographs in the last 6 months, lectures, workshops, premieres, races. There's a photograph with you, myself, and one other person after the state championship just about 9 months ago. And you don't win state championships by taking yourself for granted. You make being healthy and pushing yourself to stay healthy as a commitment to every day of your life. You don't be nice one day so you can be bad the next day. You're not kind one day so you can be, negative the next day. You don't tell the truth one day so you can lie another day. That's duality. And most Americans live in duality. They want one thing. They visualize themselves as something, but it's who you are, what you do, that determines the reality of your being. So judge a person upon their deeds, not the con job of their conversation. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.